Welcome to Faith and Family, a radio outreach of Family Life Center International. And now from Greenville, South Carolina, here's your host, Steve Wood.
Hello, this is Steve Wood, and welcome to Faith and Family. Thank you for joining us, and I hope you've been following along in our mini-series on youth ministry in a post-pagan world. You know, we're living in an age that is actually worse than pagan cultures in ancient time. Why is that? Well, ancient pagan cultures had a sense of right and wrong. They maybe have had an incorrect sense of right and wrong, but they did have that sense. That's gone today. And youth ministry has to adapt in the sense that you assume as a parent or a priest or a deacon or a school teacher or a catechist that kids today are exactly like you were when you were that age. And that's not the case. Things are changing so rapidly. Think of the cultural changes that have happened just since the year 2000. And if you're just trying to do youth ministry in the same way, you're not going to have success. And both Protestants and Catholics are having unprecedented falling away from the faith. Christian parents who try to provide the very best for their children by way of catechesis and education and homeschooling and whatnot, and yet their children meander from the faith. So what I've been trying to do is propose a discipleship model, which is different from the large group youth group model. And the large youth group model is fine. I'm saying in addition to that, there may be some, you know, might even be just a dozen or half a dozen from a fairly large youth group that want to be a disciple of Jesus Christ. And as we turn to discipleship rather than simply large group entertainment with a little devotion and such, discipleship is very serious. And what I'm going to be advocating as we wind up this series is some real serious thinking and teaching in order to bring about a well-formed disciple of Jesus Christ. If you're homeschooling, you can use this information in your homeschooling. If you're a parent, you can get some of these books for your children. If you're a teacher or a youth worker, you might start implementing at least some of these things in the program that you have. I have six or seven things I'd like to end up with here, so let's get going. First is the number one book in order to keep your child a Christian in college. Now, I'm just shaking my head here in the studio. A lot of very sincere Catholic parents may imagine that they're sending their son or daughter off to a convent or a monastery when they send them off to a Catholic college. All Catholic colleges, all of them have an undertow. Some students are not living the Catholic faith, and they need to know that before they go. They need to know that in some classrooms, even those endorsed by Catholic leaders, sometimes are teaching things contrary to the historic Catholic faith. They need to know and be prepared for these things. And one of the hardest things to prepare a young person for college isn't just an atheistic professor, it's the dormitory. So in any case, there's a book entitled How to Stay Christian in College. Now, it was written by an evangelical author, and it's very interesting. Back in the day, before Amazon ruined our book sales, we had two books to help parents prepare their children for college. And one was How to Stay Christian in College, and the other one was How to Stay Catholic in College. This book, which I'm holding, is 10 times better than the other one, but the other one way outsold this one because the author was an evangelical. And yet, within 12 months of his writing this book, he wrote it for Focus on the Family. Guess what? The author became a Catholic. So the author is Jay, and I'm going to butcher this, Bujeshevsky, and it's How to Stay Christian in College. It is excellent. is, I mean, it deals with the whole spectrum of Catholic life. The intellectual, he deals with worldview, and you're going to hear in a second just how important worldview is, and then the social life, how to keep your morals in Catholic. So this is a great little book, and it would be a great for a group to read it and then discuss it afterwards. And, you know, I realize a lot of people aren't reading books these days. This book is on Audible. It's on Hoopla. If you haven't found Hoopla yet, you better find out this afternoon. Hoopla, if you have a library card, is free. And on Hoopla, you can get How to Stay Christian in College, both as an ebook or as an audiobook. And I highly recommend it. Okay? Number two, I just need to preface this, because if you don't tackle number two, forget everything I'm going to say the rest of this episode. Forget everything I said in episode 5, 4, 3, 2, and 1. Just forget it. You know, if you had it in print, I would say just burn it, because it's going to absolutely do no good. In today's world, you're going to have to address number two. And number two is the whole pornography issue amongst young people today. It is just absolutely sky high. And believe me, there is absolutely no Christian discipleship with an existing pornography habit. I just got done with an episode in our Luke 21 companion broadcast, and I cited Jesus' words from the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew chapter 6, where he says, "The eye is the lamp of the body." In other words, what comes through the eye affects the whole person. So Jesus goes on to say, "So if your eye is sound, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is not sound, your whole body will be full of darkness." Did you hear that? And he means not just your whole body, it's your whole being. So if the eye is bringing in darkness, your being is being placed in darkness, and you could be teaching a brick wall in your youth discipleship group. You could be teaching a brick wall in your homeschooling. You could be teaching a brick wall in whatever you try to do with youth if you don't address this. And I'm going to tell you something that I found extremely discouraging, okay? Just so you know. I published a little book entitled Breaking Free. By the way, since I was kind of early on in Catholic men's ministry, Catholic fatherhood ministry, I ran into the pornography problem among Catholic families in a very major way. So I've been doing this over 20 years, okay? And my theological advisor, bless his heart, Father Dennis Cooney, who has now passed away, just a great, 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 great man, said, "Steve, you need to write one of those booklets, though," because I was basically dealing with married men. "You need to write one for single men as well." So I did. I just adapted the Breaking Free booklet into Young Men Breaking Free. My daughter was working here at the Family Life Center for me and told me about this. There's a national organization of Catholic youth leaders. And, you know, we didn't have a whole lot of money to do this. We printed a whole bunch because the regular Breaking Free ones have just flown out of our office here over the years. I think the first print one, well, actually, before it was even print, I did it as a newsletter and things like that, and we put it in print, and like 150,000 of things have gone out here. So I thought, whoa, we better get ready for the Young Men Breaking Free, because this is such a hot topic. So again, we don't make a lot of money on these things. We didn't have a whole lot of money, but we did a mailing with a sample copy to every Catholic youth leader in the United States of America. And we had the most pathetic response imaginable. In other words, and I know what's going on. I've been a youth leader. I've watched people here. And he says, "Well, what are the hot topics with families?" And I said, "Well, you know, here's one. You know, they want to get freedom from pornography in their families or with their kids." And I go, "Oh, okay. Any other topics? You know, or just skip that one. Skip this one. You're discipling a brick wall. You will fail." Okay? Just so you know. And a lot of Catholic youth leaders do not want to touch this. And so I'm just saying this isn't one to skip. Okay? And I've over the two decades plus here have multiple broadcasts on pornography. And if you need help, just send an email to askthehost@gmail.com. But they're all over the place. And now we're on all kinds of podcast avenues. You can find more than enough to find ways to help your youth group. You need to do this one, heads up. And again, and by the way, publishers aren't going to make a mint off of something that a young person will read. It's got to be short, to the point. And then as a youth leader yourself, or as a parent, or as a homeschool parent, you're going to have to get skilled in this. All right. Then we're going to go. So number one, how to stay Christian in college. Number two, freedom from pornography. Number three, traditional apologetics, traditional Catholic apologetics. And I'm going to make this very, very easy for you. There are some expensive things to do, but very economical, exceedingly practical and understandable is Jim Burnham's Beginning Apologetics booklet, particularly his first one. He goes through 12 or 13, the key areas of distinctive Catholic apologetics, gets right to the point. And no one does this better than Jim Burnham. And Jim and I were kind of laughing with each other in the sense that, you know, we saw apologetics books, full-on books. This is a booklet that a young person can actually digest. But Catholic apologetics books started at around 200 pages. And then they started growing to 300 pages, and then some of them are 500 pages. And these things are being written for other apologists, not for young people who are teens or heading off to college or maybe even in college. So Jim Burnham, Beginning Apologetics. Can't get better than that, okay? Now, we're going to do 4, 5, and 6, and they're all connected. And this is really important because this is where the fall down comes. This is where the challenge comes. And I mentioned just briefly a moment ago the importance of worldview. So what I'm going to be mentioning, the fourth, the fifth, and the sixth resource, all are connected to worldview. Because worldview, according to Barna, is more a determiner in a young person's sexual morality than teaching sexual morality. Did you get that? There is something more fundamental in how, for instance, moral decisions are made, that if that is broken, you can be talking all you want in your chastity talks, and if you don't hit the more fundamental level of the worldview, you're going to crash and burn. So for the three things that go together, the first I would recommend without any hesitation is C.S. Lewis. Now, what about a Catholic book? I'm just saying, in my estimation, C.S. Lewis, during the 20th century, was by far the most effective evangelist in the world. And I can remember, to this day, I was in a evangelical seminary co-founded by Billy Graham. And there was a class on evangelism. And I thought, well, you know, evangelism is really big. It's one of the last things Jesus kind of called us to do, go out and make disciples. So I thought, I had been involved in helping youth attend a Billy Graham crusade back in my evangelical days and all that. And so I thought, boy, this is going to be like Billy Graham on steroids or something like this. And I came into that class on evangelism in the modern world. And every single page, and we had to do a lot of reading, every single page he had us read on modern evangelism was works by C.S. Lewis. So that's just my recommendation. And one of the things that C.S. Lewis does, for instance, in Mere Christianity, the first 50 pages, and it's kind of a sustained argument, and people aren't used to sustained arguments for 50 pages, but the first 50 pages of Mere Christianity is a clue to meaning in the universe and a clue to right and wrong based on an elderly woman getting on a bus and about to take a seat in the bus, and a thug comes and takes her seat. And everybody in the bus knows that's wrong. And why? He goes on to prove the existence of God and right and wrong. That's kind of fundamental for world view. That's what C.S. Lewis does. Now, if you're a homeschool parent, a catechist, a discipleship leader, or you just like to read books, and one of the best books, I'm telling you, this is a good book. It's C.S. Lewis, Companion and Guide. It's the only book you need to buy if you want to teach C.S. Lewis. It's written by Walter Hooper, and Walter Hooper was the person C.S. Lewis basically entrusted his works to and formed a trust and everything else. And there's basically a chapter. So if you want to know how to understand Mirror Christianity or what's going on in Screwtape Letters, which I also recommend, or That Hideous Strength, a good book to read if you're concerned about the New World Order or the World Economic Forum. Rather than being kind of like not understanding kind of where Lewis is coming from, why he wrote it, and how to kind of get a handle on it, Walter Hooper's your guy. Now, this is the most amazing thing to me, and I think I just found out. Walter Hooper's book won the Gold Medallion Book Award for Excellence in Evangelical Publishing, and yet I just went to Amazon 15 minutes ago, and the paperback and the hardback are only available used. And I'm saying, you know, this is almost important enough to just turn off the radio and get on your phone and order a used copy of this book. I think, well, why isn't that back in print? Well, it was published as an evangelical book, and then I found out, well, Walter Hooper also converted to the Catholic faith back in 1988, and was a daily communicant for the rest of his life. And this was great. This is while he was still an Anglican. He described meeting Pope John Paul II in 1984 and says, when the Pope walked into the room, it was as if Aslan himself had arrived. How cool is that? So you get Walter Hooper, you get C.S. Lewis, and there's theology books, there's moral books, there's textbooks and all that. But a good book, for instance, like Screwtape Letters, you can moralize to young people all you want. When I read C.S. Lewis's Screwtape Letters first time, second time, and third time, and spaced over years, all the time when I got done, I just felt like a total jerk if I was even tempted to commit sin. Why? He's so effective on using stories and words in a way that don't sound like, you know, preaching to a young person, but fills their minds with truth and a proper perspective. Okay, that's Lewis. That's number four. Related to Lewis is worldview. Worldview is utterly important, and if you're wondering why our world is crazy and why so many people are woke, particularly our young people, and why reason seems to have disappeared, and why those who go to church, Protestant or Catholic, I'm talking about young people, even young people who cheer for the Pope and everything else, are sleeping with their boyfriends and girlfriends and thinking nothing of it, going to church on Sunday, not a problem. Why is this? And it's not just morals, because most of them have been told or taught or heard that, you know, this isn't a good deal for Christians to do, but it's part of a utterly deficient worldview. In fact, George Barna, I don't know if you know, I've tracked Barna back when, even before he printed books, I have in my office mimeographed research studies on youth and families and Christian surveys. But Barna did all these surveys and figured out that worldview was so critical and what basically has gone haywire in Christianity in the United States. And so he sold the Barna Research Group, went to Arizona, and is working with a university that in every single class in that university curriculum, I think it's in Arizona, deals with worldview. They measure a student's worldview when they come in, when they leave. And, you know, you wonder why Christians vote for pro-abortion politicians. It's part of worldview. Is there absolute truth or not? And then do you guide your life based on absolute truth? So I've done a series for radio on worldview. Again, it's out there somewhere. We can help you find it if necessary. But one of the things that I did is that I made a very complicated series on worldview, and I threw it all away. I just decided I just did what I told people not to do themselves. You got to get it down. In other words, what the essence of it was. And basically, I got worldview down into an outline of seven questions. And if you can answer these seven questions, you've got a Christian worldview. And I may do that again, that series, because I'm thinking of slightly modifying those seven questions in an important way. But just remember, don't even start to try to answer the next thing I'm going to tell you about, namely cultural apologetics. And the reason I told you, number one, to get Jim Burnham's traditional Catholic apologetics and basically take care of it is that young people, in my experience, good young people who haven't washed out yet are utterly concerned with trying to be able to explain to their friends why homosexuality is wrong, why the whole transgender movement is wrong. And so there's a need for number six. It's called cultural apologetics. And this is the key need for this, the key need for this. But listen rather carefully. If you jump into cultural apologetics and you don't build a foundation with worldview, you're going to fail. You've got to have the foundation. And I'm just going to give you one item from worldview, the first one. And if you don't get the first one, you're not going to get the other six of the seven questions for worldview. But the first question is, where did we come from? Okay, did you come from a pond that was hit by lightning and some kind of slime thing crawled out of the pond, became a monkey, and then became your great-great-grandfather? Or were you intelligently designed by the creator of the universe? Random chance that can evolve into this, this, or that? Or something has an intrinsic design to it, and that if you follow the design, you end up happy and fulfilled. That if you have tried to form relationships counter to that design, that divine design, your potential marriage is liable to be very weak and vulnerable. And so just like if you use a tool or a hinge or anything according to the way it was made, it will probably last. But if you use it in a way that it was not designed, it could break. And so you need the worldview. If you have intelligent design, you can quite easily talk about homosexuality and transsexuality. But if you don't, if anything goes, if anything evolves, and people are talking about now willing the evolution of mankind into some H2, they call it, human squared, well, then all of this other stuff comes flying in. So you do Lewis, forms the basis of your worldview in a way that you're not even talking about worldview while you're learning it. Five, worldview, which forms the basis for cultural apologetics. And cultural apologetics is where the action is. There's an evangelical group over in Charlotte, North Carolina. I've been over to a few times. They have a very interesting lineup of apologetic speakers of all kinds, of traditional apologetics. But I didn't even realize second time I went, there was a whole cultural apologetics track. And of course, that's what the young people want answers for. And I'm just highlighting that because if you don't provide that, they're going to have a lot of internal conflicts. They're going to have a lot of problems with their friends, and they're not going to know how to function in the modern world. Okay, so we got cultural apologetics. And now here's my last one. And you don't hear about this enough, but I would call it scriptural apologetics. And I can get this down to probably two questions. Two questions to ask a Bible teacher, maybe your priest or deacon or catechist or school teacher or homeschool curriculum, or what else? A Catholic college. Go and talk to a scripture professor and simply ask, who wrote the first five books of the Bible? Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. Who wrote it? Was it Moses or the pious authors? It's called J.E.D.P. And J.E.D.P. was cooked up in a German Lutheran seminary, late 1800s. It applied the theory of evolution to biblical studies. And every single Lutheran seminary student that was exposed to this theory that is now taught widely in Catholic colleges and seminaries, it's like sliced bread in biblical studies, every single one of the Lutheran seminary students lost their faith. And to his credit, the seminary professor, the German professor who came up with this, his name was Wellhausen, he admitted his mistake and that he destroyed the faith of his seminary students, and that theory is now taught widely in Catholic colleges and seminaries. And it's a great way to lose your faith, because Jesus said, if you don't believe Moses, how are you going to believe me? It's that simple. And then there's a second question. How many of the 13 Pauline epistles did Paul write? I'm sorry. This is the craziness in our world. But, you know, New Testament scholars, well, I believe 10 of the 13 and, you know, whatever. And if they can't say Paul wrote 13 of the ones that have his name as the first word in those 13 epistles, look elsewhere. And this is just, there's a whole lot with scriptural apologetics, but you don't want to lose your faith in the process of trying to build it. I hope that you will heed and maybe look outside the box a little bit in trying to make disciples for the modern world. I'm Steve Wood, your host, and you've been listening to episode 483 of Faith and Family.
Faith and Family is a radio outreach of Family Life Center International. Visit us online at dads.org.